Okay, folks, we are at 7:30, so I'm going to mute all. As usual, you'll have the ability to unmute yourself. Please feel free to do so. Please remute yourself after you make comment or question, so we keep background noise to a minimum. Later on this evening, the deck in PDF format, along with the audio track and the contents of the chat window, will go up on the website. Welcome all. If we have any new people with us tonight, welcome to the Q&A session. Guests, as always, are welcome. If you want to join, please feel free to do so at our website. And we have a pretty full evening on tonight, so I will turn it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. Take it away.
Okay, thank you, Chris, and we'll get right into it. And the first thing we have is a share. Now, this is actually something that Harvey posted on the members forum, but I thought it was kind of interesting if people need extra disk space. If you have a Google account, then you have access to Google Drive, which is cloud storage. And Harvey's found this article which tells you how to add your space from Google Drive to Windows File Explorer. So it basically looks like an additional drive. Now, bear in mind, it's not on your computer, it's in the cloud. So the files are as secure as files in the cloud are. The instructions are basically, if you go to the link here, you'll find how to actually do it. And it's basically using a Google Drive app. It basically looks like, as I said, it looks like a drive on File Explorer. So if you have the thing installed, you'll find that you actually have an extra drive here. And as it says, unless the drive letter is already taken, so if you don't have a drive G and you install Google Drive in File Explorer, it will show up as Google Drive at drive G. And you'll have whatever space you have, every free space you have available in your Google account on your personal Google Drive. So if that is a useful feature, there's the link on how to do it. And thanks to Harvey for pointing that out. Okay, next up, Chris has...
Alan, before we move on, just clarification on that. The files will actually... Unless you do something different to try to avoid this, the files are actually mirrored on your computer as well as in the cloud. I use this as a cheap man's NAS. So if I'm on one computer, if I just save it to my Google Drive in File Explorer or my file manager, within seconds it synchronizes up to the cloud and synchronizes down to my other computer that has the Google Drive app installed as well. So I don't have to do anything to shuffle files around. I don't have to have a common drive other than Google Drive. And so I find it to be really, really useful to install the Google Drive app on all my computers.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Chris. Thanks for that. I was thinking that I wasn't thinking that they were in both places. I was thinking more of the files in the cloud are that whatever risk files in the cloud are. Anyway,
well, they're there too, so the risk factor is still there because they are in the cloud as well.
Hack them, I guess. That's,
yeah.
Personally, I wouldn't put anything on the cloud that I didn't want other people to maybe have access to.
Yeah.
So Micheline wants to know, does Microsoft OneDrive use M? Well, maybe it uses One. Oh, I don't know. I don't use Microsoft OneDrive. Anybody know the answer to that question? Answer it in the chat, or we'll come back to it later on. Okay, moving along, Chris has a share about Microsoft Edge.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty cool, actually. Just saw a notification about this recently. And so the Edge browser, which is Chromium-based, is now blocking spam web notifications. So people probably run into this where, you know, a site will pop up some kind of notification or trying to get you to accept notifications from that particular site. And it may be malicious or maybe not, but in this case here, you see, click allow if you're not a robot. And so people just go, well, yeah, I'm not a robot, and they click on allow. And what they've done is turned on notifications from that particular site. Next. Then what they can do is they can spam you. with other notifications to try to trick you into further actions, either buying their crap software or whatever. Next. And Edge is now taking two steps, really, to combat this. The first is that they try to make it so that you avoid that first notification. The way they're doing that is that they've identified all kinds of domains out there that are doing this, where they're trying to trick people into accepting notifications, and they're just blocking them. Secondly, and I think this is really, really nice, because if you ever had notifications coming from a site and all of a sudden you don't want them anymore, to go and find where to turn that off for that particular site is a real pain in the butt. Well, what they're doing is they're adding to the notification that comes from that particular site that you have accepted, they're adding a little panel below it, which will make it much simpler for you to actually turn off notifications for that particular site, which I think is a really, really good thing to do. Hopefully the other Chromium-based browsers will pick up on that. Next. So if you want details about this, the URL is there, and I have pasted it into the chat window as well. An interesting aside on this is that Paul Thurrott made a notice in one of his articles. He says, well, I bet you that Microsoft isn't blocking their notifications. And he's probably right. That's it.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And Jeff has replied to Micheline's question. OneDrive doesn't use Drive. Amit uses C:\users username OneDrive, but he supposes you can assign whatever drive you want. And another service provider called pCloud, which is like Google Drive, uses Drive P. So Microsoft's behind the cutting edge on that effort. Okay, Chris, you have something for us on Microsoft slogans that we know nothing about.
Yeah, this is funny. Microsoft Windows on Windows Twitter account, they tweeted out this saying that, they just tweet out what they think is interesting Microsoft news and things like that. And they talked about slogans that Microsoft has used in the past on Windows releases. So they had examples like XP, Yes You Can, and Vista, The WoW Starts Now, Sevens, Your PC Simplified, and Windows 11 bring you closer to what you love. And that alone was just sort of mildly interesting, but Paul Thurrott, ever the wag, replied to that particular tweet with, I still think the Windows 8 slogan, F you, that's why, is one of the best, is the best one of all time. And I thought that was pretty appropriate. There's a little bit of humor there. That's it.
Anybody would think you're not a fan of Microsoft anymore, Chris.
I'm not a fan of some of the things that they do.
Okay, moving along, we have another share.
Yeah, so this is an interesting browser extension, and if you've ever had it, you go to a website and you have a field that you have to fill out on their search bar or something like that, anything at all where you can actually type text in, and you've had that site where you couldn't paste information into that. This don't F with paste is what you want to try out. Now, they say it doesn't prevent sites interfering with keyboard shortcuts like Control V, or right-click menus. Well, I'm not sure exactly how else most people do pastes, so I'm not sure exactly what this thing will actually do. But they do say for sites that actually do block things like keyboard shortcuts and right-click menus, you can try the edit paste from the browser menu, and apparently the browser extension will help you out. You can configure it so it only operates on specific sites so that it doesn't do anything annoying on other sites that are acting politely. I don't suggest that you install this extension unless you actually need it. Okay, so if you do have a site where you periodically go to, you try to paste information into an edit field and it fails, try out don't F with paste. And then it's available for Firefox and also for any Chromium browser. And just a reminder on this that if you're using a Chromium browser, you usually go to chrome.google.com. The trick is that you go to that site with whatever browser you want to install the extension into, and rather than saying add to Chrome, you'll have a button that says add to Edge if you happen to use Edge to go to that particular URL. Or if you went to it using Opera, it'll say add to Opera or so forth. So it should work in any Chromium browser, or there is the Firefox specific version of that. So if it helps, give it a shot.
I think if you go to the Chrome Web Store in Vivaldi, it says add to Chrome, but it adds it to your Vivaldi browser. Okay.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Because all the other ones I've tried, they actually say add to Edge or add to Opera or whatever. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. They don't recognize Vivaldi as a browser.
Okay. All right, and talking about browsers, Stuart has a bunch of stuff for us tonight, and he's going to start off with something on Brave.
A bunch of stuff on Brave. Well, I'm going to start with Brave, but I was going through my browser settings, and I noticed one of those little red flags saying, new, look here, use me. And it just turned out to be a setting to deactivate unused tabs until you go back to that particular tab. Now, I'm kind of anal retentive about closing tabs I'm not using because I'll probably forget about them. But I know a lot of people leave many tabs open in a browser at the same time. And if you enable this setting in the system, and then there will be a setting to deactivate unused tabs. You will probably save a fair bit of memory and maybe boost a little performance in your computer. And after I sent this note in, I looked on my wife's computer, and yes, Chrome has the same feature, but it's under performance, not system. So it's in there somewhere. And then after I sent that note in, I loaded Edge because, you know, I forget that there's more than half a dozen Chromium-based browsers. And Edge has it, I forget where, but it's already enabled by default. Or I turned it on and forgot I did it because I hardly ever used Edge, so I always forget what I've done in there. But so this feature seems to be widely scattered throughout Chromium browsers, and you should go look for whatever one you happen to be using and save some memory.
Okay, thanks, Stuart.
Happy hunting.
Next up, you remember that we have this question about things on YouTube that people like, either videos or channels. And Stuart has one that he recommends, I think.
Well, I reference Pocket Now because it is probably the grandpappy of YouTube mobile tech channels. It has been around for a good 20 years in one form or another, but always under the same name. And has churned through quite a few reviewers and hosts, and Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile, is one of the most well-known and highly regarded one. Joshua Vergara and Juan Bagnell. Some other guy, I can't remember, he calls himself the Unlocker. They all have their own channels now, and they all came out of Pocket Now, which is still going. The host, Jaime Rivera, I think I said that right, Riviera? No, Rivera. I mean, he's a real workhorse. He does at least one video a day, and he's constantly reviewing what's going on in the United States and with a bit of an international focus as well, but it's an American channel. They know which side their bread is buttered on, so they focus on that market. The other reviewers, as I say, all have their own channels, and they share information. This is why so many reviews wind up saying the same thing, in the United States anyway. They love Samsung. they acknowledge Apple is very good. But that doesn't mean they like it. And they generally seem to be reviewing the same devices roughly around the same time. Now, given credit, they each have their own little spin on each device and what it can do and can't do. And some reviewers get a little more technical, some get a little more artsy with what they're doing because, well, let's face it, our mobile devices can do so many different things in so many different ways. Wow. But I suggest you look at Pocket now because even if you don't like what the guy is saying at the moment, there's 20 years worth of technical reviews in there, and you can often find reference to something that may not exist anymore that you're curious about.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, George. And going on to Loony Bits, which is Stuart's idea for the Q&A sessions, basically looking for Canadian sites that have interesting information for us. So again, Stuart has one coming up right now.
Yeah. I came across this site a few years ago, the Institute for Canadian Citizenship. I thought that was kind of interesting looking. I forget what I was looking for, but I found this. And it turns out that when she retired from the public office, the Right Honorable Madame Clarkson, Art Clarkson? Yeah, right, went and set up this with her partner. And it's about welcoming new immigrants to Canada. It's not about assimilating them. It's not about plugging them into any molds. If you've noticed in the slide, the actual website is inclusion.ca. It's welcoming people and helping them see what we've got already that they can use to make a home here and contribute any way they see best. You can become involved, you can donate, you can contribute, you can suggest things for new immigrants, you can sponsor immigrants. I know one of my aunts gave up a home to some refugees just last year. I don't know if she did it through this website, but... And I'm not asking anybody to give up their homes. I mean, she was already in assisted living and hung on to the house, but you know, so it was just kicking around doing nothing. But anyway, the Institute for Canadian Citizenship. Immigrants, where would we be without them? Take a look at this site. Maybe you can help out.
Okay, thanks, Stuart. And I have an extra one, which is kind of a Canadian site. And the idea here is if Google and Facebook are going to stop providing Canadian news for you, you might want to look elsewhere. And this website is like a compilation of all kinds of things. And one of the things that they have are these 70 Canadian news websites. So they have a little bit of information on each provider and at least a link to the individual website. So whatever you're looking for across Canada, there's probably a link to it in that list somewhere, or at least for most of the things you might want in terms of Canadian news. Okay, Chris has got a share coming up, which is kind of a follow-up to his rant on file history. And this is part two of his expose on pre-file sync.
Yeah, this is all about replacing Windows file history. And so this part is going to be about automation. So next. So the journey so far with Free File Sync, I wanted to replace file history with Free File Sync because I thought it could do the job for me that file history was doing quite nicely until Microsoft started destroying file history in Windows 11. Still works really, really well in Windows 10. You can make it work okay in Windows 11, but it really looks like they're headed down that road of getting rid of it completely. And so if you're interested in seeing what the first of this series was all about, the URL is there. So at last week's Q&A, we used FreeFileSync to mirror two folders. So our documents folder on Drive C, mirroring that to /backup/documents. So everything would be the same in those two folders. So problems with it really is amount to the fact that, well, first off, it's a manual process. So file history, one of the charms of it is just works in the background, and it just keeps things up to date automatically for you. So this being a manual process, it works, but we don't want to have a manual process. You'll forget to do it. So the other thing is that old versions of files are not saved. So /backup/documents will contain always exactly the same files that are in your documents folder. So if you delete a file from your documents folder on Drive C, FreeFileSync in last week's session would happily delete that file from /backup/documents. If you modified a file in /backup/documents, FreeFileSync would happily overwrite your changes because it's trying to make it look identical to the documents folder on Drive C. The other thing is that we were only mirroring that one document folder. So file history allows us to set up multiple folders that will get backed up. And it allows us to do old versions of files getting saved, and it is not a manual process. So we want to overcome all three of those limitations of the way we left it at the end of last week. Next. So this week is about automating the process. So we're going to take on that first bullet point where it's a manual process from last week. We're going to automate that process. Next. So what we want to do is create a batch job, a FreeFileSync batch job. So as we ended last week, we actually had in that left-hand panel, we had a job that we had created that did the mirroring of /users/ctaylor/documents to, on the right-hand side, /backup/documents. So what you do is you select that job in the left-hand panel. Next. And then you click on the Save As Batch Job. And that's also available on the File menu, but they have a little toolbar that you can just click on that Save As Batch Job. Next. And it comes up and it tells you quite well. It's one of the nice things about FreeFileSync is it gives you hints all the way along about what's really going on. So when you click on that Save As Batch Job, it tells you it'll create a batch job for unattended synchronization. Well, that sounds like what we want is unattended synchronization, automation. Next. There are three boxes, and these are not checked by default. So you have to check them if you want them, and I think most people probably want them. The first is run minimized. Okay, so that means that when the job runs, it's not going to pop a window up on screen over top of whatever you're working on. It just runs minimized, and you don't see anything. Well, if you have an automated process, that's probably what you actually want. The next is auto close, and that if you don't have that checked, it's going to have a summary dialog box come up at the end, tell you what it's done. Well, if you automate this to the point of running every 5 minutes, you don't want summary dialog boxes popping up every 5 minutes. The third one is a little bit of a, well, you have to decide whether this makes sense for you. Ignore errors. So if you have that backup drive, in my case, it was /, you know, so it's the drive E. It is an external hard drive. Is there a chance that sometimes that is not going to be attached to the computer? If it's sometimes not attached and you know it and you just don't worry about it, you just, when you plug it in, things will work properly. You probably want to have it just ignore errors. Otherwise, it's going to pop up and tell you, oh, there's a problem. We can't see drive E. However, if it's a drive that you know is always going to be attached to your computer. It's always going to be there. Maybe you don't want it to ignore errors. And that way, if it has a hard time finding drive E or something at some point, then it'll let you know that, oh, something is wrong with your processes. Next. So then it'll pop up. So when you click on the Save As, it'll pop up with a dialog box where you give it a name. So you just name it whatever you want. You know, I called it Sync Documents to External Drive, and just leave the extension as .fs_batch, just so that Free File Sync associates that file type with itself. So just name it that. Next. Okay, then what we have to do is we have to use Windows Task Scheduler to actually run that batch job. So you click on the Windows Start button and you type in Task Scheduler, and eventually as you're typing it in, you'll get something popping up at the top of the results pane or the best match. It'll show up there, and just hit Enter when it appears or click on it to run the task scheduler. Now, in the left-hand panel, it'll be collapsed down there where it actually just says Task Scheduler Library. And while it's not strictly necessary, I think it's a really good idea if you're going to use Task Scheduler to create a folder for your tasks, because there can be hundreds of tasks that are there. And if you have to go back in and modify something, it's a lot easier to find it if you put it into a folder by itself. Next. So what you do is you right-click on Task Scheduler Library, choose new folder, and then you just give it a name. So in my case, I just gave it the name Chris. Next. So you can see here we have actually a number of folders. We expand out the Task Scheduler Library. We have all kinds of them that are already there. Some of them, Microsoft, obviously, they put all their tasks under there. Power Toys, you know, they have a task that runs to check for updates and things like that. There are all kinds of, you know, any program that is creating tasks can create its own folders in there if it wants to, and many will. So once you've created your folder, you just click on that folder. And over on the right-hand side, you click on the Create Basic Task. Now, you can actually do the next one down in the list, Create Task. I suggest if you're not really familiar with using Task Scheduler, start off with Basic Task, because it'll step you through most of the essentials. Now, we're going to have to go in and modify it to correct for two deficiencies that Basic Tasks don't do, but it'll do most of the things for us, so it'll just step us through it one step at a time. Next. So the first thing you have to do is give it a name. You have to give it a name, because that's how they end up showing up under the scheduler. You don't have to give it a description, but I highly suggest that you do give it a description, because if you come back a year from now, and say you've named this dupe file, and then you come back a year later and you say, what the heck is this task? Whereas if you fill in the description, you can tell it more details about it so you can remind yourself later on, oh, yeah, now I understand what that task is all about. Next. You click on the next button, and then it'll drop down to the next thing in line there, which is trigger. And so what we want to do is, how often or when do you want this to actually run? And you notice here there is no option for every 10 minutes. Okay, so the best we can do at this point in time is say daily. So we select daily, and we click next. Then it'll drop down to the next thing, and it says daily, and when do you want to run it? And the start date and start time don't really matter an awful lot in here, because we're going to force it to actually kick off at some point. But you do want it to actually say that you want it to run every 1 day. Click next, which is the default. So the next thing you do is, like, what do you actually want to have it do? So we're going to have it start a program. Click next. Then you have to browse to find the program Free File Sync. So we're going to actually run the program Free File Sync, and the default installation location for that is Program Files, Free File Sync, freefilesync.exe. And you can use the browse button, or you could just type it in if you want. I suggest you always run it through the browse button, and that way you don't accidentally put in a typo. Next. Now the important thing here is that we don't just want to run Free File Sync. We want to run Free File Sync with our batch job that we created earlier. So you have to enter in, and there's no browse button for this. You enter in the complete path to the batch job that you created earlier. So in my case, it's c:\users\ctaylor\documents, and then the name of my batch file, sync:\documents\externaldrive.ffs_batch. So wherever you created that, that's what you want to actually put into that. I suggest that you enclose that entire line in quotes. If you, for the program, you don't, if you use the browse button, you never have to use the quotes. They'll get added if you need, if they are needed. But when you're putting in those extra arguments, I suggest putting it in just in case somewhere in your path you have a space in it. If you have a space, you absolutely have to have that entire line enclosed in quotes. If you don't have any spaces, you don't have to have them in quotes, but it never hurts to have the quotes. So I say just always add quotes, and that way you don't end up accidentally putting in something that is basically two arguments being passed to the to Free File Sync rather than just the one argument of the batch job itself. Next. And you click Next. And then you click Finish. And then you're done. Well, not quite. We're not quite finished because there are two things that we actually have to go back in and possibly fix. Next. So you right-click on the task. It'll show up in the pane in the middle of the screen. Right-click on it and choose Properties. And then remember we said that we were running the task once a day. Well, we want to run it every 5 minutes, not once a day. So what you do is you select the trigger that you actually have there. On the Triggers tab, you'll have one trigger. Click it and choose Edit. Then you'll get the ability to modify things about that daily task. And what we want to do is repeat this task every 5 minutes. Now, just a clue on here, you can choose any of the drop-down options that you have there. You can actually fill in anything that you want. So I could actually go in and edit that field after it's been filled in. Like, there's no option for 1 minute. But I could select 5 minutes and then just click in the field where it says 5 minutes, and I could actually edit, say, 1 minute. But I just choose 5 minutes. That's twice as often as Windows file history will actually do for me, which is kind of nice. You have a little bit more flexibility now than file history is giving you. Next. Now, there's one other thing that if you have a laptop computer, you may want to change. Okay? So if you have a laptop, it can run on battery. So the default for tasks is they will not run if you are on battery rather than plugged into the wall. Well, this task is not taking a great deal of electricity or power of your computer to run. So I would say even if you're on battery, you probably want the task to run. So next. So on the Conditions tab, there's an option there for start the task only if the computer is on AC power, and it is checked by default. So it will only run if you're on AC. It will not run if you're on battery. I suggest you actually deselect that. Now, if you're on a desktop computer or something that isn't on battery ever, it doesn't hurt to uncheck it anyways, but it's not going to make any difference for the task. Okay, so the results that we have right now. So the first bullet point was what we had at the end of last week. We had e:\backup\documents will always have exactly the same files that are in c:\users\ctaylor\documents. So my documents folder on my hard drive will always be mirrored exactly to e:\backup\documents. So new with this week, we're actually checking every 5 minutes for changes automatically. We don't have to do anything manually at all for any changes, and it will automatically run the process if there are any changes to do that for us. Now, it will only work if you're signed into Windows. You could actually create a task that will run even if you're not signed into Windows, but I figure, well, why bother? Because if you're not signed into Windows, well, is there any point in running? Because your files aren't changing. Your data files that are in the documents folder or whatever, they're not changing. So if you're not signed into Windows, typically. So I don't worry about the fact that whether you're signed into Windows or not. And only as long as the external hard drive is plugged in. Well, that makes sense. It can't synchronize the files if the external hard drive is not plugged in. If it's not plugged in, the job will silently fail because of that option we had when we created the batch job, where we said ignore errors. So if the external drive is not there, the job would just silently fail, and that's okay as far as I'm concerned. Okay, so again, that's something that you probably want to think about a little bit, whether it makes sense for you to allow the job to silently fail or not. Once I'm reliably confident that this job is actually running properly, and I periodically check backup processes like that. It might be, once a week or something like that. I just check to see, is this really doing what I think it should be doing? I do that with file history. I do that with free file sync. Okay, so I'm happy to let it silently fail if that's the case. Next. So are we done? Well, not quite. So currently the job is running as a mirror. So the backup folder is always going to have exactly the same files as in my document folder on the C drive. So what about those old versions of files? I want to preserve those. At least file history allows me to preserve old versions of files. What about a deleted file? File history allows me to recover deleted files because before it deletes them in the backups, it actually deals with them and makes them available to me through the file history interface. And then what if I want additional folders backed up? Because file history allows me to back up multiple folders and drives and things like that. And so I want to be able to replicate that as well. I don't want it to be just my documents folder that is getting backed up. I want it to be able to be basically an arbitrary set of folders that I can have being backed up by Free File Sync. And so, more to come. So we'll continue our journey for the next 2 weeks in this before we sort of wrap it all up, where we've replicated all of the capabilities of file history with additional flexibility that goes quite a bit beyond what file history gives you the ability to do.
Okay, thanks, Chris. That's really good. And I've been using Free File Sync for a long time. Not like that. I do everything manually, but it works really well. So I highly encourage people to try it and follow this process because this looks like a really good option. Okay, moving along to backups and things. I've got a thing here on a program called TreeSize 3. And it's basically a free program which displays folders on a drive and ranks them by size. So this is really useful if you're running out of disk space and you want to find out where the big spenders are. What are the big ticket items that you might want to take a look at and be able to remove and create some free space? And this has been a problem for me. I've got a couple of machines that are running on not huge solid-state drives. So I have, and I also like to dual boot them. So I have Windows in one partition and Linux in a second partition. And I also have a third partition, which is a dedicated data drive. So I have to be pretty careful with my disk space on computers that don't have huge drives. Now, Chris and I have talked about this previously, and we had a thing way back when on how to clean up. And we're basically we had this thing called the Ultimate Guide to Saving Disk Space. And there were basically two things. And the first one was using Disk Cleanup. And so that's the built-in Windows utility. So if you search for that on File Explorer or in the search bar on the panel, then you'll find Disk Cleanup. And when you run Disk Cleanup, you'll get a display like this. And you can see that my Windows drive, and this is a Windows partition, it has a capacity of 139 gigabytes. but I'm using 137. So I've actually only got free space is 1.6 gigabytes. And Chris will tell you that that's not nearly enough to run Windows efficiently. And it's getting pretty close to the time when Windows will be moaning and groaning and wanting me to do things anyway. So if you do the disk cleanup, this button right here, you hit disk cleanup, then it will go away and it will come back with a bunch of stuff. And it tells me that I can save 47 megabytes. Well, that's okay, but it's not a huge amount of disk space considering I've only got 1.3 gigabytes actually free. But notice down here, there's this button for clean up system files. So let's hit that guy and let him go and browse a bit deeper and see what he finds. Well, lo and behold, he finds 5.5 gigabytes. And that's mainly because there's clearly been a Windows feature update at some point here, and it keeps the backup files in case I want to roll back my version of Windows. Well, I never do roll back my version of Windows, and because I have a disk image, and if I need to go backwards, I'll just reload a previous disk image. So I have absolutely no interest in keeping 5 gigabytes of update files. And so with all the other stuff here, if I just hit OK now, it says I can gain 5.4 gigabytes, which is a bit more like it in terms of the amount of free space I'd like to have. So let's hit OK and go for a copy because this one takes a little while to do. And then it will come back and it tells us that, lo and behold, some miracle has happened. And rather than getting 5.5 gigabytes of free space, somehow it's generated 12.5 gigabytes of free space. I got no idea how it managed to find 12 gig when it only said it could find basically 6. But I'm happy because I've got lots and lots of free space. However, there's another thing you can do if you don't find enough free space by using disk cleanup. And one of the things we suggested was this program called TreeSize Free. And I've been using this for quite a while. And it's really quite nice. So if you run TreeSize Free, you have to download and install it. Clearly, it's a third-party utility. So basically, what you do is you can choose scan from the main menu here, and then it will let you select a directory. And when you select a directory, it brings up a File Explorer type window, and you basically choose Drive C. And then off it goes, and it lists, and it's really quick. I mean, this stuff, it takes a few seconds for everything to come up, but it comes up pretty promptly. And you notice that everything is ranked. So these are the main folders, but the biggest one is Windows, the second biggest one is program files, the third biggest one is users, et cetera, until you get down here where, you know, you've got 4 meg rather than 30 gigs. So up here is where you want to be trying to find some free space. And so you can't do much with Windows, I don't think. I never play around with Windows, but I will happily look at program files. And there's 27 gig almost of program files. And there's a bunch of Windows applications. I've got a pretty big file here, or folder, which is SQL Server, and I'm actually using that on a project right now, so I need that. Interestingly enough here, PowerToys, I have it installed, and it takes 2.5 gigabytes for PowerToys, which is really unfortunate because there's only like 2 PowerToys that I really like and use, but when you install PowerToys, it's all or nothing, so you have to get everything. And then I've got some other things which I'm actually using, but then if I look down here, I see that I have a Dell folder in my Dell laptop. It's using almost a gig, 700 megabytes of space. But this laptop, it's my new laptop, but it's way out of warranty. So this Dell software, which will be things like support assistant and all that kind of, you know, update manager and stuff, it's not giving me any updates and support. So is that really useful? And then down here, I've got another 0.5 gigabyte on Macrium Reflect, the free edition, which, if you recall, a few weeks back, we talked about that. That's actually going to be eliminated at the end of this year. And I've already moved to RescueZilla. So since I can run Macrium if I want to on a live USB, do I really need to take half a gig on my laptop? Then there's a couple of other things which I thought were interesting. There's 600 gig here in Azure Data Studio, which I got no idea what it is. I think it's actually associated with SQL Server. It's a query editor. So it probably got installed with that. And then the other one down here is 400 meg in a root folder for .NET Core, which is an open source development platform. Now, that might be Azure Data Studio, or it might be some stuff I've been working on different programming languages, and I've installed this, and maybe I don't actually need it.
If I can interrupt just a second, don't touch anything in .NET Core. There's lots of apps that are built on .NET Core, and so if you delete that or try to get rid of it, you'll probably have a bunch of apps stop working. You know, like my photo editor might be built on .NET Core.
Yeah. No, that's true. I'm just looking at stuff which is really big and yeah. Why is it there, and do I need it? That's exactly the case. So what I do next is I go into the control center and look at the install program. So do they uninstall the program? Just to list what's installed. And sure enough, here's the Azure Data Studio, 600 meg. Here's the Dell stuff down here. There's actually a couple of different things there, but they're, 340 meg or something. So there's almost a gig between those two things if I don't need them. And then the other thing, when I go down that list, I find that there's almost 300 meg in Cisco WebEx. Now, this is one of these Zoom-type and Team-type clients. And I actually use this very infrequently with a business that I deal with. But I only use it like once in a blue moon, maybe once a year. So maybe what I could do is I just delete this and free up the space. And then when I need it, I'll just install the client when needed. And interestingly enough, although there's 300 meg right there, if I scroll down the list even further, I find that there's another one tucked away down here called WebEx, which is Cisco. And it's another 460 meg. Which again is once in the blue moon. So there's some stuff there that I think I might be able to get rid of. And sure enough, if I look in the list here and look on my users, my username, and then in the app data is a bunch of stuff. There's the gigabyte for WebEx. So by getting rid of some of those things, which I really don't need, or I could reinstall when I need to, it turns out I've generated another 6 gigabytes of free space. So now I'm almost up to 20 gig of free space on my drive. So if you're short on free space, it's certainly worthwhile digging around in the file system a bit and seeing what you can find that you don't need. As Chris said, if you delete something that you really do need, well, you're just going to have to reinstall it. The chances are you'll find things that you really you don't need. But the real trick is that stuff gets hidden all over the place. So you really have to use the tools that are necessary to do the job, find the stuff that you don't want, and remove it. So that's my S3 Penneth on finding extra free disk space. I'm pretty happy. I got lots of free disk space all of a sudden on my Windows C drive.
Yeah, well done.
One thing I do is to use everything, which indexes the names of every file on your computer. And you can sort that long, long list by the size of the file. And you'll find very big files such as install files or zip files, as well as pictures and videos and stuff. and you can preview them, or you can and you can delete them if you don't, if you figure you don't need to keep them. So that's another way to get rid of a lot of stuff very quickly.
And that's also is a really good free program. It's again a third party utility. It's called Everything. And it's essentially a replacement for the Windows search engine. And personally, I like it a lot more. It's fast and it is very flexible. So I typically turn off the Windows search engine and just use Everything. Works really well.
Yes, it comes from voidtools.com, I believe.
Correct. That's right. Yeah. And it's in the Q&A somewhere. I'm sure we've talked about it previously. And if it isn't, Mr. Google will find it for you. Okay, so we're into the last 10. I don't know if we've got any questions in the pipe there, Chris.
I don't think so.
So Chris has just found the URL for Everything if you're looking in the chat window, and it is indeed in voidtools.com. So if anybody has any other questions or things that they'd like to share, otherwise I have to dig out a new rant from Chris. Okay, there's a question here, Chris, must be for you. I have an issue with FreeFileSync Mirror. FreeFileSync wants to add a file to the right side, which is the target.
Yep.
When I know that file's already there, I try to uninstall and reinstall FreeFileSync to get rid of its database, but the problem still exists.
If it's trying to overwrite it, it's because it thinks the files are different. So it could be that, you know, either side is more recent or a different size. Or depending on how you're doing the compare, you can actually set up compares that it'll actually look at the contents of files, which slows down an awful lot. So I don't suggest you do that by default. By default, it just compares the file size and the date and timestamp. So if it is at all different between the left side and the right side, it will try to overwrite, or it will want to overwrite the destination with that. The one thing that you can run into, depending on the file systems that are used, is problems with GMT and daylight savings time and things like that. You can get it so that one side will all of a sudden think it's 1 hour out of sync, but that would affect all files. So if it's only one file, it's because FreeFileSync does think that the file in the destination directory is different than the file in the source directory. What I would do to just sort of fix this and see if it works is remove it from the destination directory, run FreeFileSync, it'll try to update it, run FreeFileSync again, do another analysis or compare, and see if it still thinks that the files are different. It certainly shouldn't think that the files are still different. So that's what I would do.
So I've just loaded FreeFileSync on my system here, and it's doing my standard compare, which is my data drive, my dedicated data drive, which is in Windows is disk D, to a USB flash drive, which is drive U. And unfortunately, most of them are brand new files, so you're not seeing what Chris is talking about, where it's trying to update a new one, except this one right here, where it's got this I don't know what to do option, which is kind of interesting, because one of the things you can do, and I really recommend this for FreeFileSync, is right click on this taskbar here and choose size and date. So you get these two size and date parameters on your file. So you can see right here that this file on the left hand side, which is my source drive, is the 12th of July, whereas this one on the target drive is the 11th of July. So this file is newer than the target. So what it really should do is give me a right arrow. So why? I think what's happened is, I don't understand, because I normally don't edit the files on my flash drive. But it's suggesting that this file has been edited and this file has been edited and it doesn't quite know what to do. I think it should know what to do because of these things right here, but it clearly doesn't.
Well, part of what it is, Alan, I think part of what it is you're doing a two-way sync, and it knows that the destination, your flash drive, that file was modified from what it used to be the last time a synchronization ran, and therefore it's saying, like, okay, well, it's changed on both sides, so what do you want to do? So that's what it's thinking, is that it thinks that the one on the right-hand side changed as well.
Yeah, and that would kind of make sense, because I ran this yesterday, so it copied this file over here, which updated this file essentially, and then this one's been changed again today. So now they've both been modified, as you say, Chris. The other neat thing about Free File Sync, though, is that even though it decides that you're going to send it to the right or it doesn't know what to do, if you go to this guy right here, then it tells you that's what the problem is. Both sides have changed before since the last synchronization, but I can force it to go to the right, or I can force it to go to the left. I have that option. Now, in this case, I know that this is the new file and that's the old file, so I want to overwrite the file. So I'm going to say, do that. So now when I synchronize, I say start, and it's finished. And now if I say compare, you notice down here it says no files to synchronize. So now my source and target are back in sync. So it's a really neat little program and pretty powerful too. Okay, any other questions?
Not a question, but a comment. As well as using these free file sync and maybe sync, and there are a variety of programs, but one that comes with Windows is called RoboCopy, and it has a variety of switches where you can use. It's also very fast because it buffers everything, and you might want to consider that if you're happy with the command line, because it's a command line utility. But look up RoboCopy, and it may solve a lot of your problems, especially when you're creating batch files or PowerShell scripts, and you want to back up things or synchronize folders.
And RoboCopy is really good, Chris, and Tom, if you have lots and lots of files that you want to copy.
And if you are comfortable at command line, RoboCopy has about 150 switches that you can use, including things like, you know, in the case of errors, retry up to a million times to copy this particular file. It is a very, very powerful tool. And for anybody who wants to script processes that are very, very complex, RoboCopy can do a really, really nice job. I used it for many, many years. But for the ease of the average person just to be able to do it, Free File Sync is pretty hard to beat.
Okay, I don't see anything else in the pipe there, so I'm going to move to the wrap-up, and if anybody has anything else, we can come back to it. I don't think I have much in the wrap-up. I think this is it. Next week, we have another Q&A. I know we have at least one thing in the pipe, because Chris has sent me a nice new rant about a certain software company, which shall be nameless until next week. So next week, next Wednesday, July the 19th, 7:30, if you have questions or topics that you'd like to share, send them to our suggestion box and we'll take care of it, everything from there. So I hope you enjoyed everything we had tonight, and we'll see you next week.
And next week we will continue our journey with Free File Sync to continue down the line on that.